Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
a molecular tour of MDMA or ecstasy, the party drug called E. Now there's a sort of a hidden warning not to ever discuss illicit drugs or anything like that at school or chemistry or even formally or at places, because people can just listen to it and say, well, he's talking about drugs, he's telling people about drugs, and it can be sort of very detrimental to you. So there was a group of people who had sort of made enemies. This is years ago. We're working in the education department, and they made one joke, an inappropriate joke, in some educational material about drugs. I can't quite remember what it was, but it was used to, without review, shut the whole unit down and get rid of it. So it's always a very dangerous thing to talk about this, but this is a podcast, and by talking about it at the start, hopefully we can alert people to this type of behaviour, so when it's actually drawn out, people perhaps listen to this podcast and realise, oh, well, that's not what it's about. So how did I read about it? Well, how did I get interested in it or alerted to it? Well, I'm doing one aspect. I'm doing molecular tours just to reinforce my memory of molecules and structures and bonding between it, sort of naming some of the bonds and stuff like that. That's one reason why I'm doing it. So I've been doing caffeine and chocolate and various nerve gases and dyes and beautiful indicator molecules like phenethylamine. All the beautiful structures, there's some which are very flexible, but things in general which have nice flat rings, they've got keys, they tend to be neurotransmitters, they have the actual structures in them. There's things that you're interested to do for different sulfur bonds, things that I tend to focus on, the double sulfur bonds, globulin molecules, proteins, how RNA works. So it's just the generalized interest in it. Now, today, I've got the overall practice of having to read for several hours a day just to get up to the skill level, and hopefully listening to me you can hear a gradual improvement. Now that's what I'm aiming for, the end result of a group of people listening to me. Well, that's a useful byproduct to look for. I'm more into the cardiac rehabilitation, ability to speak coherently onto it for a reasonable amount of time. Also to actually, in the process, have to really force a recall. And you, as you do it, you realize that you're slowly improving on it. That's a long mountain to climb. But in doing that, I had to read the Cosmos magazine. Now, initially when I first did it, it was one or two articles. And then after an effort, it was a fair number of articles. Then I read the whole magazine, and then the whole magazine in 2 days. I'll get down to 1 day, but then bring it up from 20-minute periods to 40-minute periods going forward. And of course, in the background, I've got the software chugging away with the advanced maths to put basically conceptual IP addresses on the podcast. So you just throw them at a database and bang, like by magic, they're up in the app. And you can see, if you go back to the Cosmos magazine, you can start to see the different apps going on. So there's a lot of different things going on at the moment. But that's got me into the frame of reading Cosmos magazine. Then you get sort of useful things that people have to write articles, and it's generally along the lines that, you know, the situation's far worse than it's, you think. Yes, generally they have to be in line, sort of in that hinterland, in line with the common sense, agreeable, but a little bit edgy on the outside, sort of saying something which is sort of mainstream but not mainstream. So the idea here was that we have probably overshot. You know, this is always this pendulum goes to get the crude effect. We go too far and then after a while the pendulum swings back the other way. And this is the case for psychedelic drugs or psychoactive drugs like LSD, etc., that they may have in selected places a clinical place. Now, although there you can always find groups of experts who are for it, when you read into it, there's this broad view that's saying, oh, look, these things are very messy instruments. They produce hundreds of responses and trying to see exactly what's going what and things. And you look at the trials and you go, yep. So at least you can read ahead. The scientists, you know, are pretty strong scientists, and there's some regulation on this. There's some going in. The actual, perhaps what's not so helpful is the people who are involved in the illicit party scene reading this and saying, oh, well, perhaps there's no problem with it. And there's all these, this social upheaval about it. And I don't know how, why. I definitely just struggling to get through my life as it is. I don't think I'm very much, I don't think I would ever take any form of drugs, because, you know, life's tough enough as it is, and experiences enough as it is to get through. Probably call me a bit of a wowser. One of the things they pointed out is that MDMA, and they said, oh, ecstasy, and I thought, oh gosh, I've got to really try and see if I can remember MDMA. And that's really grateful, sort of, after, I suppose, an hour, a couple of hours of break. I got back in, read a few more articles, and I had to go back, and normally I would have had to go back to the article and actually read it, but I could remember. I wasn't sure that I remembered it. I just typed in what I thought it was, and then sure enough it came up on the computer, MDMA ecstasy. And the overall view in the article was that ecstasy was one of the least invasive effect, or least problematic psychedelic drugs to give to people. I don't know. It's really interesting to see about the interaction with drugs and history. So you've got Humphrey Davies, Humphrey Davies, the king of the periodic table, and he had back in the 1790s, they discovered laughing gases, and they had parlours, laughing gas parlours in London, and the ladies would go off to it, and as big a scandal as you could possibly think could happen. And this is the time before regulations and science and all that. Well, yeah, well, it's the time before scientists. You know, that sort of thing is happening. A similar thing happened with LSD. People began to, you know, do quote-unquote scientific research. We were basically off having parties and really upset Nixon and got in that war on drugs type of thing, which is rather interesting because Nixon himself was quite obviously corrupt and had a sort of you have to be at that level of not being too good yourself in order to actually take charge and actually start setting the agenda. If you are actually a sort of a gentle soul, you're not going to take charge. And if you're a gentle soul, you might be a bit more reticent about your own behaviour. So it's always very interesting to see how these people interact and how the magazine gets onto one aspect of it and how various people talk about it. And it's hard to say. I suppose my overall view is that there are these, we're looking at one sort of consequence and there's other deeper problems, sort of more I was trying to think of the word. The word's gone from my head. Existential problems. There you go. Existential problems facing society that we have these people with a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of resources, and a lot of purposes, and we send them off to these concerts, and then they don't have to go back and actually slave in a field to get money or to get food. They don't have to face all these crises. I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing, but it is a product of affluence. Not necessarily money, but sort of time and resource affluence. And their value in society is being a consumer, and their jobs are to help other people consume. It's a very consumer oriented society. And so it's sort of like there's not very much mind developing going on before you take the mind altering drugs. That's my overall view. And then you have people trying to regulate it, but although you can say a certain percentage of the regulators are without blemish, a hell of a lot of the other people doing the regulation are themselves not necessarily the most angelic people, and they're angelic in a sort of a non-angelic in a very sneaky way to try and work out what's going on with them. But without further ado, let's get into MDMA, ecstasy, the molecule. And it's one of those things that there's almost a template for molecules. Usually there's a ring of six and a pentagon hooked onto the ring of six. Now that's true for, so a pentagon and a hexagon bung together, and that's does your caffeine, that general geometry, does your caffeine, many of your dyes, phenethylene, well, it just does lots of them, explosives, hexagon, pentagon, bung them together, that's a general thing. Does it caffeine as well? Now caffeine, I've got to remember, it's got two oxygens off it, it's got four nitrogens stuck on them, and a few methyl groups stuck around them. There you go. Remember, I couldn't really tell you, sort of have a general idea, but it's all getting a bit woolly. Alanine's in there, I have to go back and look at it to get it. Get it going. And of course in this molecular tour there's this thing where you've gone in front of a I don't know, a general theme park, and you've discovered something completely complete, and now for something completely different, and that is the nitrogenase enzyme, which is sort of sticking out, contradicting everything you could possibly think about this area. But ecstasy starts off with your standard hexagon of carbons and a pentagon of carbons hooked onto the top of your hexagon. So you have a hexagon flat side up, two vertices sticking midway, sort of a hexagon not tutoring on its top, but actually flat on its bottom. And then on top of that, so you've got a flat on the bottom, flat on the top. On the top of that is your pentagon of carbons. From your pentagon of carbons. Now, in so many other molecules, bases and stuff like that, you've got nitrogenous base. I don't know whether they're actually basic or acidic. This is in DNA, but in this case, rather than having nitrogens in the ring, they've got an oxygen in the ring. In fact, two oxygens in the ring, and so it's an oxygen in a carbon chain with no other oxygen off to the side of it, making it a doozy. If it's got an oxygen off to the side of it, it's a carbolic acid, it's an ester. Carbolic acid or an ester. Yeah, it's an ether. So that's a pretty amazing thing. But in this case, what we have is, in that top pentagon, if you can imagine it, two oxygens. Now for me it's really easy because I sort of think of the colours of these things and I sort of remember the colours. And they're actually not physically not colours, they're nominal colours. Oxygen's got red in it. And so it goes the hexagon, and you're building a pentagon on top of that, so you've got two atoms supplied by the hexagon, you need three more, and so it goes oxygen, carbon, oxygen, back it down to carbon to make your pentagon. So going around, it's carbon, carbon in the hexagon, and oxygen, building up to a central carbon on your your pentagon, another oxygen, which links between your carbon and the hexagon of carbons beneath. Now, the idea of the beauty of a hexagon of carbons and all this type of stuff is that you don't have a lot of flexibility with the molecules. Now, I just have to really think, I don't know whether this, I have to look at J-mol, whether this will be, the hexagon is completely flat, and that's sort of super cool. You've got double bonds in there, which is really sort of, almost not quite way of seeing. You've got the pi bonds, which is to do with the orbitals of the carbon in the hexagon. I did do a podcast on the quantum mechanics of bonds. Yeah, I just remember I got really told off for my wife for going in for these walks around the park. I'm actually doing walks around the park because it's actually so easy to do because you don't have to think, you can podcast and think, if I'm actually walking around the streets of Glenbrook, I'm watching where I'm going. Okay, getting back to it. We've got our hexagon carbons, a pentagon at the top with two oxygens in that pentagon, symmetric. And so when you actually look at the molecule, it looks as though it's some sort of bug with these two eyes on it. There's another one which looks just like a snowman. There's the nitrogenase, which looks like a fish or a footy, depending how you look at it. This one looks like, I suppose, a bit Mr. Magoo with two big eyes, looking at the eyes of the oxygens, and it sticks to a central carbon. That central carbon has a bond to the oxygen, a bond to an oxygen, a bond to two hydrogens on it. So it's a rather sort of neat little carbon up the top there. It's a rather a neat molecule up the top there. And I was just trying to think about the electronegativity which is going on there. Those oxygens are going to be pulling electrons up the molecule, polarizing. Then, on the bottom, what you do on one leg, so we now go down to the bottom of the a hexagon of carbons, and what we do is we stick on two carbons. So if you can stick on a carbon, stick on one carbon onto the base there. So one leg, one carbon on the base is just left alone. It's got, it's supposed to have a hydrogen on it. But, I just have to think about it. But on the other one, its single bond is going to a carbon. That carbon bonds to two oxygens and yet onto another carbon. Just trying to think. So that carbon, each carbon can bond onto four things. So what it must bond onto is that, so you've got one carbon down, and then a second carbon on. And that carbon then bonds onto a few things. So if it's got one, it's sort of like one bond is up, grabbing onto the molecule, the big molecule. The rest of the molecules have got three arms to hang onto. One arm hangs onto a hydrogen. One arm hangs onto a nitrogen, and another one bonds onto a carbon, which that carbon's got oxygens attached to its three other spare arms. So, but then that carbon, that central, that second carbon along there, binds onto a nitrogen, and that nitrogen can bind onto a total of three things. That leaves two bonds, for one for a hydrogen and one for another carbon, and associated three hydrogens. I can see it, but I can't. I'd love to be able to explain it a bit better to you. But that'll be the diagram for you. And let's go in summary of it, because I've got a fair bit to actually chuck through tonight. Getting through. Oh, good God. Sorry, there's a building site around here. Sort of Glenbrook. Beautiful Glenbrook. It's a sort of tourist gateway to the Blue Mountains. So, of course, we need millions of dollars spent on tourist centre. Now, the old tourist centre was lovely. It was just inappropriate. Not enough, but it said what the mountains were about. This one, I shudder to think it's got parking, the whole lot. The important thing here is that there's been ferocious winds today, and the fencing over here is all just fallen over. And of course, to people, to the untrained eyes, oh, it's just fencing falling over. To someone looking at it, it's a potential hazard. You know, someone could have got, oh, it's all over the place. It's been these really powerful winds happening all today. Okay, getting back to it. We've got this structure to go through. This is the ecstasy, or MDMA. And saying this will just burn into my head. And of course, it's sort of like some of the periodic table, the different R elements, all the different this element and that element, being very similar, and then trying to remember them and trying to put them aside. So, starting from the top, right at the top, and working down the molecule. Now, the way it's drawn in the book, in books, it's left to right, but for me, it's top to bottom. At the very top, you've got two hydrogens hooked onto a carbon. That carbon then branches out and hooks onto two oxygens. Those two oxygens then hook down onto a ring of six of carbons. And so that what I've described is a hydrogen's carbon, oxygens down to carbons, that's the pentagon. All good and thing, and then those two carbons hook onto two carbons, hook onto two carbons, and then hook back to themselves to form a hexagon. Now, the rightmost bottom carbon has attached to it a carbon, and then hooked to that is a carbon, and that carbon can have three other things bond to it. It's got one bond up to the big ecstasy molecule. It's also can bond on to three other things, and it selects a hydrogen, a methyl group, which is a carbon with a hydrogen on it, and a amine group, which is a nitrogen, which can bond to another hydrogen. It's got one other bond, which then bonds onto another methyl group. So let's count those carbons going down to get you some of the formula. You've got two oxygens. You've got one, three, five, seven, 8, 9, 10, 11 carbons, perhaps, I hope I'm right, one nitrogen, and look, the rest hydrogen, and it's a formula. Now, off the top of my head, I can't tell you the molecular weight of that, I can't do that. I used to be able to do that, so I could look at a molecule and, without thinking, tell you the molecular weight. It's gone. Of course, I'm on the way back. And that's giving you your molecular tour of, MDMA. So it's helping you remember that. And it's also helping you and me remember some of the following things. Rings, ethers, that's in chain oxygens, amines, but not really an amine, it's a nitrogen bond and some of the idea of the methyl groups. There's one, two methyl groups sort of hanging off the end there. Now how it actually works is something which is, again, led me on to more amazements. It's the cytol. Cytol, this is the how it operates. It operates somehow in terms of, I think when you produce dopamine or all the happy drugs, what happens is there's sort of the nanny there which says, oh, get out, you know, you can't be too happy, let's clean up after it. So you naturally produce happy drugs yourself inside your head. And what it does is it stops the clean up operation of happy drugs. So basically it blocks you being sad going ahead. So it's a very interesting thing to understand. So it doesn't, apparently it doesn't produce hallucinations, but it produces profound sense of empathy. And, well, there we go. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll get on to other podcasts over. Thanks. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.